He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
And we're starting off with the diesel dilemmas in Europe. Two things about diesels in Europe.
Couldn't we say diesel dilemmas in Dusseldorf?
Very good.
Thank you.
What is that called in the...
Diesel dilemmas in Dresden. Alliteration.
Okay. Anyways, diesel dilemmas all over the place, maybe in Europe, because maybe it'll spread like a diesel disease. Anyways, diesel engines have been taking a hit in European press lately because it's a continuation of the long-running Volkswagen corporate diesel scandal. And now it is quiet a little bit in the U.S., except maybe there's still something lurking underneath. I'm not sure. But it's rising to a head in Europe with the Porsche line of vehicles. A certain number, 100,000 of Porsche vehicles, Cayennes and others, are being recalled because they are apparently possibly spewing forth illegal amounts of something.
Or they have the software too.
Right. They have the software to do it. Chrysler's in trouble with that as
isn't
well.
Isn't everybody?
Allegedly
isn't
it
everybody.
It is everybody. Bosch is really behind a lot of it because they use Bosch. I think it's Bosch technical equipment is what has been developed through Bosch, and everybody's buying Bosch fuel management systems or whatever.
Let's not kid ourselves here. All these engines are equally either dirty or not so dirty, but the technology is really the same between a Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche,
Chrysler Jeep
diesel engine and Chrysler's and
Peugeot's.
Land Rover has one in the Range Rover in this market.
Same goes for Jaguar.
It is always, as a layperson, it's always appeared that the diesel market was, if not rigged, then somewhat under the management of forces that are not exactly clear to a regular person.
It's always been rigged in the sense that it's rigged in the sense that in Europe, for instance, the price of diesel fuel is a lot lesser than that of gasoline, and that's what made
diesel
so popular. Keep in mind that gas prices in general are about, historically have been and still are, about twice as high as here. So if you can save 25% or 30% or more on your fuel cost,
you're going to buy the car that uses that fuel.
But that is a fair point. And also, unless, you know, and you take it for granted, and I take it for granted, because we've all been, you know, a liter and a gallon, and we've all, unless you've experienced that, unless you've experienced driving and purchasing fuel, not here, you have no idea how good you've got it.
In the U.S. Absolutely correct.
We complain now or we're
it's like, it's $3.15. Right. Well, it's like, try $6 a gallon, boys and girls.
Exactly. And that's what it amounts to in Canada, too. They sell it by the liter. And diesel in Canada is right around 1 or 2 or 3 cents within being on par with regular grade gasoline in Canada. But anyways, so they're going through continuing throes of diesel dilemmas in Europe. Another decision that has been made by a higher court than the original court that mandated that diesel engine cars could be banned in some of the
polluted city centers.
But the upper court has just confirmed that they can be banned anywhere that a urban center or some center wants to ban them. That's going to be an interesting situation. It may mark the death of diesel sales.
It won't because, first of all, new diesels are much cleaner than they were even 5 or 10 years ago. So the problem in Germany, for instance, is the fleet of older diesels that are still running the streets.
But I think the newer ones are going to be piggybacked onto the old ones because nobody's going to be able to tell which ones are going. They're not going to put sensors up at a gateway and you drive your diesel through and you get a green light to continue or a red light to stop.
But it's also like congestion pricing, basically. There's a certain level where you can take, you can go to a certain point and then you can't go any further. And then in a lot of cases, you're going to take public transportation anywhere because if you, anyway, because if you've ever tried to park, that's its own joke.
All right. I think in Europe, it's going to be whether diesel has a future or not is going to be a political decision. We all know that in the price of fuel, there's a high percentage of taxes. And the way taxes are levied either on diesel or gasoline is going to affect the outcome. Also, cars in Europe are taxed on horsepower and size of the engine. And
that takes people – that makes people want to buy smaller engines because the taxes are lower as
well. And what about hybrid and electric?
Well, there are incentives for in Europe as well as the U.S. The incentives have expired in some countries, and they're being championed as coming back in others because, as usual, when incentives that are as big as they were in Europe and as big as they are so far until you reach a certain number of sales in the U.S. are big incentives to make you buy an all-electric car. And when the incentives ran out in a couple of the countries they ran out in Europe, the sales plummeted. So there was a march to reintroduce the incentives. But if they never had incentives in the first place, eventually I think we would be moving towards your electric cars in many cases regardless. The cost will eventually come down below where they're at now. When the hybrid cars, vehicles came out, it was the same old thing. Hybrid vehicles had a premium price tag in most cases. Ford was one of the exceptions, but in their Lincoln Mercury division in the old days where they had both the gasoline and the diesel and the hybrid versions priced at the same sticker price. But as I have said on shows years ago, when I purchased my Hyundai Sonata hybrids, I found end-of-year specials because the salespeople didn't know how to sell them or didn't try to sell them, and they pile up, and eventually they want to get rid of those cars.
But not
just
that. And I
bought two Sonata hybrids at between $7,500 and $8,500 off the sticker, and that made it cheaper than loaded gasoline versions of the same car.
Right.
So the whole idea of hybrid premium pricing and electric is somewhat political
but
or
engineered. Of course it is. Before we go on to what you're about to say, remember also – 8 years, I think, after you purchased your first hybrid, your Toyota, you were still having to explain to people.
Oh yes.
That so
understanding hybrids is still a mystery to some people today. I still talk about hybrid, and they can't believe that all I'm doing is changing the oil.
That's because at the time you bought a Camry, not a Prius, and well, it's all about perception. If you bought.
No.
Prius sold,
actually,
like,
no.
If our audience could see my facial things now.
It's not. No, it wasn't. What was really fascinating is even people who bought. You could buy if you bought it, you knew what it was. I'm talking about people
right.
who don't understand.
And they won't buy it because they're scared of it.
And so, that's what I'm talking about.
But there was 8 years ago. There was virtually no advertising by the dealers on their hybrid vehicles that were then available, and they still aren't advertising. When have you seen a ad on TV, football games or sports for a hybrid line of vehicles?
All I see
other
are trucks.
Maybe Lexus.
I think you missed my point about the Camry and the Prius. My point was when Toyota started selling hybrids, they marketed the hybrid and they made a very special looking vehicle, the Prius, and it sold, and it still sells extremely well. They put the same technology in a Camry that looks like a plain Jane Camry, and they didn't sell many at all.
None of that was the point of what I was trying to convey, period, was that still to this day, you've got a car-buying public that needs to understand. You've got a certain segment of the car-buying public who, at least going back, didn't, whether they knew that it was a Prius, whether they don't know what a hybrid is. That's all.
Okay,
that's all I was trying
to
say.
But you've got the other problem is the dealer network and the sales network force within the dealership network who aren't used to selling slow-selling vehicles because that doesn't churn their commissions very well and doesn't get the inventory moving off the lots, which is a big incentive from both the manufacturers who have end of year quotas, put them on the dealers so they can order the next batch of cars for the succeeding month and the like. And so there's no real push to get people to go green at the level that maybe high gas prices might in the future, or higher taxes on non-green cars. There are all sorts of things Europe will do to incentivize people buying green cars that we won't ever see in the U.S. because of political forces that aren't interested in helping us do that.
How are they?
Would you agree, Mr. DeMarkin?
Yes.
Which part?
We have which part? We have these incentives too. I mean, we have tax breaks on electric cars.
We do.
That will last just so long, we do have them.
And they may run out for Tesla, and they may run out for the
everybody.
Chevrolet Bolt, and because there's a numerical limit once they're reached. I think it's 750,000 I don't think it's across the board. Jay may be able to correct me on that. But there's something in the neighborhood of 750,000 numerical numbers of electric cars, which may trigger the end of the $7,500 federal tax credit, unless it gets extended, of course, in the government, at government levels, which we will see when it gets close to that, and the car makers start seeing their sales plummet because the buyers can't get a $7,500 credit. And that's only if you're qualified to get a tax credit. If you don't make enough money to do it, I don't know that it does any good.
But if you don't make enough money, you can't buy a Tesla anyway.
Well, there we go. Okay. But there are going to be secondhand versions of all these cars coming out at some point, and they may be affordable. I think one of the best affordable cars that people who really end up buying gas guzzlers are the used Priuses that are on lots. And because they're still going to get 50 miles a gallon. Are you listening out there, buyers? And they're going to be probably somewhat inexpensive, more inexpensive than new cars or new Priuses and maybe even new gas cars. And they are perfectly serviceable vehicles, in my opinion.
So with that being said,
can we move on?
Yes.
Okay.
Who's going to report back on Carvana?
Oh, Carvana. That's what he was going to research it and come in.
Did you see the ad?
I saw the ad, but
and it's like a automat for sandwiches almost.
Stay tuned. I haven't figured that one
out. Okay.
I'm going to go to the continuing saga of shrinking engines. We've talked
about
the disappearance of V8s moving down to twin turbo sixes and all that, and a lessening of sixes moving to four cylinder engines and four cylinders moving to three and all that.
And oh no, Deschevaux.
Then we go to pickup trucks, which are the gas guzzling king of the road vehicles in the United States. And everybody has said if gas was going to go up, big pickup sales would plummet. Well, we're going to get that tested if the gas prices keep going up. So what's happened? General Motors is ballyhooing the announcement that a four-cylinder turbocharged pickup is going to be available in the 2019 Silverado Sierra series of their trucks, which is going to produce 200 and something horsepower and is going to be able to run down on two cylinders. So this is a full-size pickup. This isn't the mid-size pickups. It may move to that, too. So, of course, there are test vehicles running around now and getting rave reviews, or if not rave, very good reviews by Auto Week and a couple of other magazines that are getting their hands on them and saying they are quite pleasant to drive, very adequate to with power and all that. None of them has loaded one up with 2,000 pounds of pickup bed filler to see whether it's just as good full as it is unladen, because unladen, they're not that heavy. And Jeep has come out with a turbocharged four-cylinder for their Cherokee line of vehicles now added to the V6 and the regular non-turbo four versions, which have been the mainstay of this model since its inception in 2014. And I'm going to have the ability to road test one and give a full report on it in a few weeks, probably. And I'm looking forward to it because I think it could be an exciting engine for a performance-enhanced version of the Cherokee, maybe like the not like the Jeep Grand Cherokee. What is it, Trailhawk? Is that? No, that's the off-road
the Jeep
performance.
Expert.
What's the one with the big engine in it? Anyways, I like performance at certain levels, and we'll see if the turbo does to the Cherokee, which a turbo may do for other vehicles.
How many? Layperson alert. Okay, when you start talking about cylinders and horsepower and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Did you say two cylinders?
I said that the Chevrolet four-cylinder pickup truck engine will be able to go down to two cylinders for cruising.
And what does that mean?
That means that only two cylinders will actually be producing the power,
but it has
to
more
drive
more,
the truck along. But it's got four cylinders on startup and everything else.
Oh,
there
good.
Are already cylinder deactivation engines out there and six-cylinder versions.
We've had them since the 1970s.
We've had them since the 1970s.
They haven't worked.
Satellite had it first.
But what is key here is that you start. It's not that you're trying to make. You'll forgive me, but you know I still
I don't
have
think
PTSD.
I'm gonna forgive you. What is it?
PTSD from Dushavos.
Dushavos, yes.
Right, so
Citroëns, for people who don't know what Dushavo is.
It means two horses.
That's correct.
Okay.
Two cylinders.
Dushavo, right. And so anyone who's ever
horses.
Been, that's so how do you make a pickup truck go on two cylinders was what I was trying to figure out.
It's all computer driven. They can
deactivate. No, you bring it down.
You bring it down.
So therefore, it is sold as a, you either buy still, are eights available? Do you buy eights, sixes, fours?
Eights are still available.
They are. There is a trend to small four-cylinder, usually two-liter engines, turbo, non-turbo. Volvo announced 5-6 years ago when they still had their five-cylinder engines that were pretty cool engines, that they were within a few years going to have only one engine, and it would be their two-liter four-cylinder engine, and that is the only engine available throughout their model lineup.
Already? There's not a six anymore?
Nope. There's no more sixes, no more fives. That's it.
Okay.
And they deliver power, they deliver torque, but they sound like four cylinders.
Well, Audi at the A8 level, I believe, is going to have a four-cylinder A8 available in the not-too-distant future, and the A8 is the flagship of the Audi line of vehicles.
Wasn't it an 8 because it was an 8?
No, but it started out only with a 4.2 liter 8 because I had two of them way back in the
And that's the
last
only reason
century.
I thought that. I remember someone else
then
who got
one. Then downsized to the 6s, which is the new standard engine in the Audi A8.
Okay.
And they're working towards putting a four-cylinder into that in a year or two, if not before the end of this year. I'm not sure. So this is all around trying to enhance the desirability of these larger, heavier vehicles that are usually purchased only by well-heeled, financially capable people and who don't really care whether they had to buy a four-cylinder or not, whether they'd prefer the eight because that's the way they've been used to. That's what they've been used to for years. And so we're watching this continuing trend year by year. There seems to be new technology that's making more power out of the small engines. And to that end, I'm going to head for a minute's worth of ranting about this theory that Mr. Pruitt has, or somebody in General Motors has, about turning us into a one-grade gasoline country because they want to have premium only available so they can get even more horsepower out of the smaller engines. And there'll be
a 3 to 5%
increase in fuel efficiency, and the public won't care that they can't get cheap regular anymore. Bing, that is not true. You're listening to one on this radio station saying, if I don't know whether I want to go before this one grade gas shows up or not, but if you know that we will never have cheap gas again if they actually push this thing through.
Oh, you mean if it's like diesel?
Oh, maybe. Diesel's one grade.
That's what I mean. But diesel's the price of diesel going back to is...
There's not a lot of reality to actually get this mandated because of all the things, all the engines that can't run on premium or can run on regular, however you want to put it. And there are going to be so many cars on the road for years to come that are using regular grade gas.
Remember leaded and unleaded?
Yeah, exactly. And there's still leaded gas out west, incidentally. And you can get it for vehicles that can use leaded gas. And it's interesting. In Wyoming, I think, is one of the states where I actually saw leaded gas available about 10 years ago when I was out there. So leaded gas is still around, as is non-ethanol blended gasoline, even in the east. There's a gas station up off the Northway going up towards Canada where if you park off, you can get full unethanoled gas at a gas station, and it's about 8 or 9 cents more expensive than ethanol blended gas. Jay, you wanted to close the show, I think, didn't you? Let's talk about
We don't talk about motorsports very much on this show.
So we're going to now.
But we're going to now. Just want to mention that this Memorial weekend coming up is the first of three public events weekends at Lime Rock. Public event, racing weekends.
Big race events.
And this is the weekend for Pirelli World Challenge. And there are a bunch of races going on Saturday and Monday. Actually, I think all the racing
practice is on Friday, correct?
Practice on Friday, qualifying on Saturday. There's a car show on Sunday, which should be interesting. No racing on Sunday, and the big races on Monday. The Pirelli World Challenge is I think, interesting because all the cars are based on production, or most of them. I think there's maybe one class where they're non-production cars, but most of the classes are cars that are based on production cars. Not only sports cars. Yes, there are GT cars. There's Ferrari, Aston Martin, Porsches, Lamborghinis.
BMWs.
BMWs. But there are smaller classes where they run even front drive cars. They're Minis, they're Hondas, they're Kias. So it is a...
It's a great weekend, actually.
It's a great weekend. And
lots of variety in racing.
Real cars on the racetrack.
So they're real cars that have been...
You modified. Can recognize them. Yeah. Oh, they're heavily modified.
Yeah,
for sure.
Skirts and all sorts of body.
But part of it is taking a regular car and tweaking it so that it is the ultimate in performance.
It is not built from the ground up.
You're not
going to
buy
this
car for the driving on a street.
I totally understand that. But
to take the total opposite in NASCAR, for instance, where we, you know, NASCAR is what it is, and we see all these cars that look like cars going around on speedways, but those are purposely built race cars. They have nothing in common with a street car.
The body is the closest thing they might have in common to it, and underneath
it doesn't even.
Layperson alert number three. The reason it's worth mentioning is because while I don't know as much about motorsports as I do about equine sports or dogs, for example. When I started finding out about equines, I was like, really? Really? Because there are all of these levels of information that you suddenly need. So,
Before we end, I want to put a plug in for my partner on the table here because many people who go to these race events, and I've been known to be one of them, like to think about how could I do on a particular track that I might be attending a race at. And, of course, I don't have an IMSA license or whatever I'm supposed to have to do it. I did at one point.
Or $250,000.
Or $250,000.
Race car.
But I do have $50 or $150. And Jay happens to have
a simulator.
And he will be at the track with it, I believe. And if people wish to go and see what they can do on the Lime Rock track or choose any track in the world, he can bring it up in his computer system, and there are three wonderful screens at which you sit at, like sitting at this table, and you've got a surround screen vision of the track. It's a duplicate of the track as far as the surface goes, the bumps and everything else, and you can spend 15 minutes or however much you can endure and drive yourself into heaven, maybe. And you can crash, too, and you know what happens? You don't do any damage to the car you're in.
You hit the reset button.
You hit the reset button, and it's back, and you haven't spent a dollar other than to use the sim. So I encourage anybody going to Lime Rock, if they want to do this, go find Jay at his simulator. It'll be somewhere in the infield, I'm sure, and have fun. And we hope the weather is like our broadcast day today, which is perfect with a capital P. Blue skies, dry conditions, and perfect temperatures.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.